Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
St. Clair of Assisi, Santa Chiara, pray for us. It's her feast day today, and this amazing saint who did so much after hearing Francis preach and started her own order. Well, very closely tied, of course, to our own Mother Angelica, our beautiful foundress, and of course, the Poor Clares. We'll talk more about that in the next hour, but I do want to remind you that there's a beautiful series that EWTN allowed me to film and produce in Italy, shot in Italy, except for the open and the close, as we say in the biz, which are actually shot at the shrine in Hansville, which looks like Assisi, which is exactly what Mother intended. But it's a beautiful series, and you can learn about the saints in Italy, and it's tied closely to my EWTN book, Italy Shrines and Wonders. Discussed this morning with Anna Mitchell on the Sunrise Morning Show. And it's a beautiful series, and it takes you to these different places of these great saints. And there's a whole segment that's about 5 minutes, and they're not too long. I don't think I have anything past 5 minutes. Maybe there's one like 6 minutes, but I try to keep it, you know, 7 minutes or under, because I know we have a limited amount of time. But the series is free. There are reflection questions at the end. It's beautifully filmed, again, on location. And you get a nice summary of the life of St. Clair of Assisi in front of her basilica in that central Umbrian town. And I also talk about the connection between Mother Angelica and St. Clair in that series. And again, we'll go into more detail on the life of this great saint in the next hour. But you can check it out at EWTN.com/Saints in Italy. Again, EWTN.com/Saints in Italy. It's free, and I think you'll really enjoy it. And I'm grateful to the network for allowing me to produce a series connected to the book. Coming up in the program today, it is a Monday, and that means we are going to check in with Matt Swaim of the Sunrise Morning Show. But he talks with us on Monday mornings about the Journey Home and highlights of the Journey Home program, which airs on Monday evening. So he's with us. And then Michael New, there's a couple of stories that really show how so many of the judges out there have lost their way and have turned into activists on the bench. There is a recent story regarding a judge who is trying to force the refunding of Planned Parenthood after money was removed for a year from Planned Parenthood for our taxpayer dollars after the big, beautiful bill passed. And there's a news story that Catholic News Agency has, and we'll actually have it in our news today, about a judge out east that gave barely a slap on the wrist to a man who physically assaulted two pro-life counselors, sidewalk counselors, and they had very serious injuries. And so the man was not given any jail time. He just gets to sit at home for a year. Wow, isn't that nice? You know, there is such a thing as justice. John Paul II said, forgiveness is not the opposite of justice. So while we pray for those who persecute and hurt us, justice also needs to prevail. And that's really important. And we'll discuss that as well with Michael New. He has another piece on that. He's a great researcher for the pro-life movement. He writes for the National Review. He also is a professor in Washington. So looking forward to that discussion to give us lots of information that can help us when we're trying to make decisions and really understand the teachings of the church so much better, especially when it comes to the key issue of life. All right, let's take a look at the weather on a Monday. And a big thank you to Tom Price sitting in for my producer, Richard Jesse, who's taking a well-earned vacation. He'll be out for a few days, and Tom will be back in the studio in Irondale running things. Okay, so the weather is saying that we are going to have heavy rainfall in the southern plains, Carolinas, and Florida, and that heat in the west and northeast. Heavy to excessive rainfall over parts of the southern plains, the Florida panhandle, and the coastal Carolinas could bring areas of flooding today, hot to extremely hot temperatures in places through earlier this week and across much of the western U.S. and northern New England. Well, it is August, and August is a very warm time across the country, but it's the, what do you mean, a few weeks left of summer, so get out there and enjoy it. And many school districts have already opened up, so it feels like the fall for some, but don't let that fool you, because summer is still not over yet, according to the calendar. It's 4 minutes past the hour. We appreciate your listenership here at EWTN. Check out all of our great work at EWTN.com. Right now, at 4 minutes past, it's time to check the news on EWTN. While addressing the faithful gathered in St. Peter's Square for his Sunday Angelus, the Holy Father reflecting on the gospel passage from Luke, inviting the faithful to ask themselves how they're investing the treasures of their lives. Quoting the words of the Lord, he said, "Sell what you own and give alms," a pope urging Christians not to cling to the gifts they have received from God, but to use them generously for the good of others, especially those in most need. He said, "It's not only about sharing our material possessions, but about putting into play our abilities, our time, our affection, presence, and empathy." He said, "Each person is a unique, priceless good in God's plan, a living, beating capital that must be cultivated and invested. Otherwise, it dries up and loses its value." The Pope then warning the faithful that this treasure can be squandered or even taken by those who, like a thief, turn it into an object of consumption. The gift of God that we are, he stressed, needs space, freedom, and relationship to flourish, and above all, it needs love, which transforms and ennobles every aspect of our existence, making us more like God. The Holy Father's remarks yesterday, echoing the teachings of St. Augustine, who Leo quoted, "What you give will certainly be transformed. It isn't gold, it isn't silver, but eternal life that will come your way." We'll talk about this more with Michael New coming up later on in the hour. A 28-year-old man found guilty of assaulting two elderly pro-life activists in front of the Planned Parenthood facility in Baltimore. But as Catholic News Agency tells us this morning, he was sentenced to just 1 year of home detention, avoiding any jail time. Judge Yvette Bryan handed down Patrick Bryce's sentence after he was found guilty of assaulting then 84-year-old Richard Schaefer and then 73-year-old Mark Crosby back in 2023 when the two were providing sidewalk counseling in which they encouraged potential Planned Parenthood clients to choose life instead of getting an abortion. Prosecutors hope to put Bryce behind bars for 10 years, and the Thomas More Society condemned the sentence as disgraceful. They said one of the victims was knocked unconscious. The other suffered broken bones in the face and lifelong eye impairment. The head of the Thomas More Society provided Crosby with victims' counsel after that attack 2 years ago. And more on that story coming up with Michael New later in the hour. In other news this morning, Mark Mayfield tells us the office of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says a call was held with President Trump yesterday.
According to the Prime Minister's office, the two discussed Israel's plan to take over the remaining Hamas strongholds in Gaza. Netanyahu also thanked Trump for his support of Israel since the start of the war. It comes as many of Israel's allies have been calling for a negotiated ceasefire in Gaza to secure the release of the hostages and to help resolve the humanitarian crisis in the Palestinian territory. I'm Mark Mayfield.
And five journalists working for Al Jazeera are dead, killed yesterday by an Israeli airstrike. Jody Ginsberg with the Committee to Protect Journalists says these types of incidents must be addressed.
Journalists are civilians and should never be targeted in war, and they must cease and desist. We also need to see far greater action from the international community.
Israel claims one of those killed was actually working with the Palestinian terrorist group Hamas, while Al Jazeera says the strike was a targeted attack on the media in Gaza City. NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte said Friday's meeting between President Trump and Russian leader Vladimir Putin could be an important step to end the war in Ukraine. He spoke about the implications in an interview with ABC's This Week.
Next Friday will be important because it will be about testing Putin, how serious he is on bringing this terrible war to an end.
Trump did not say where in the state the meeting would be held, but said further details will be forthcoming. He also said he's not sure if Ukrainian President Zelensky will be involved. The president holding a news conference today, meanwhile, on crime and beautification in Washington, D.C. in a Truth Social post yesterday. The president saying the news conference will not only involve ending crime, murder, and death in our nation's capital, but will also be about cleanliness and the general physical renovation and condition of our once beautiful and well-maintained Capitol. Texas Governor Greg Abbott ramping up pressure on Democrats who have fled the state. In an interview with Fox News Sunday, he said the threat of arrest for the lawmakers will remain for as long as necessary.
If they show back up in the state of Texas, they will be arrested and taken to the Capitol. If they want to evade that arrest, they're going to have to stay outside of the state of Texas for literally years.
The governor also saying it's within his authority to keep the Texas lawmakers in a special session indefinitely. The Democratic lawmakers say they have left the Lone Star State to keep state Republicans from having the quorum needed to redraw the state's congressional maps in their favor. At least 100 members of the 150-member Texas House must be present to conduct business, and approximately 50 of the Democrats have left. Abbott says their commitment to voting as elected state officials is a duty, and it's not optional. Alongside Abbott's extended threat of arrest, a Republican governor has also threatened to increase the redistricting margin for his party if lawmakers don't return to Austin. And Vice President J.D. Vance is defending GOP-led redistricting efforts in Texas, saying they're necessary to ensure fair representation. In an interview with Fox Sunday Morning Futures, Vance claiming that Democrats have tried to rig the game in their favor for years, and that Republican efforts to redraw congressional maps, well, he says it's essential to restore balance.
We're just trying to rebalance the scales and, frankly, push back against a very unfair system created by the Democrats.
His comments come again after the Texas House Democrats fled the Lone Star State to keep the House from having the minimum number of members needed to proceed. And religious leaders continuing to call for the end of Florida's controversial alligator Alcatraz. A prayer vigil held outside the immigrant detention facility in the Everglades yesterday. It came as construction but not operations at the site were temporarily halted while environmental laws are being considered. And Michael Kastner tells us the owner of a Trump Burger restaurant in Houston is out on bond now following his arrest by Immigration and Customs Enforcement.
Roland Biani came from Lebanon to the U.S. in 2019 on a visa that required him to leave the country by February 2024. ICE arrested Biani in May for overstaying his welcome, and an immigration judge granted him bond as he waits for an immigration hearing. ICE says the case proves the law applies regardless of what restaurant you own or political beliefs you might have. I'm Michael Kastner.
An 11-year-old California girl is recovering after being bitten by a mountain lion outside her home in Malibu, California. It happened late Sunday afternoon while the girl was feeding chickens. She was rushed to a local hospital after being bitten on the arm and is expected to be okay. The mountain lion was tracked down, shot, and killed by California Department of Fish and Wildlife officers. Last year, a 5-year-old boy was attacked by a mountain lion at Malibu Creek State Park. And Natalie Rodriguez tells us there's a reminder for parents of children going back to school to think before you post.
Your social media feed is about to flood with pics and videos of kids heading back to school, but be careful with what information you put out there. Officer Kira Delva with Miami Police warns.
Avoid putting your child's full name. Avoid putting the name of the school or the grade. Keep the information very vague because strangers could use this information to gain trust with your child, and we don't know what their motives are.
Also, a good reminder to drive with caution. Lots of kids are walking or riding their bikes to school. Remember to watch out for them and the school zone speed limits. Natalie Rodriguez, Miami.
It is a Monday morning. It's almost 13 minutes past the hour. Hope you're having a great feast day of St. Clair, Santa Chiara of Assisi. A little bit more about her later on the program. Coming up next, because it's a Monday and we know that the journey home is on this evening on EWTN TV, we check in with our very own Matt Swain from the Sunrise Morning Show and the Journey Home and the Coming Home Network to find out the highlights from the journey home and also just to find out what's going on with the wonderful ministry that they have in terms of helping so many people discover the Catholic faith. And then, as I mentioned earlier, Michael New from National Review Online is going to take a look at some of these activist judges and two very big stories. There was a judge recently that is trying to force states and in one particular area of her district to pay again for Planned Parenthood, and then another judge barely slapping the hands of someone who assaulted and physically harmed two pro-life leaders 2 years ago. We'll talk about both those stories with Michael New. More Catholic Connection coming your way. St. Clair of Assisi, pray for us. Wishing you a beautiful and a blessed Monday and a beautiful feast day of St. Clair of Assisi. My friend Matt Swain from the Sunrise Morning Show and the Journey Home and the Coming Home Network joined us on Mondays for highlights of the Journey Home. And so we haven't had a chance to talk about, because I know I was being interviewed by the lovely Annie Banani, as I call her, this morning on your program. But my goodness, the last couple of days, talk about powerhouse saints. We had St. Teresa Benedict on Saturday, St. Lawrence yesterday, St. Clair today. Now, I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with St. Lawrence, who was a deacon, and he was grilled. He was persecuted and then obviously martyred. But he had a famous saying, turn me over, I'm done on this side. And in Italy, he's very popular because he's the patron saint of cooks. So you said you had in honor of St. Lawrence, my friend. You had a special little event over the weekend?
Yeah, I try and do a little grilling on the Feast of St. Lawrence every
year.
There you go. So we did some chicken wings. You know, I'm in the Maryland vicinity, so we did some Old Bay chicken wings on the grill and did them up. You know, I like to point out that St. Lawrence's joke about being turned over because he was done that time, that's his last joke. I like to refer to the joke that got him martyred, which is where the prefect of Rome said, all right, you guys are all under
treasures.
Bring me your treasures. Mm-hmm. And he shows up with the poor and the sick and, you know, gestures to them and says, these are the treasures of the church. So it's a great reminder of human dignity on top of all the other fun stuff that you get to do with St. Lawrence.
Well, it's kind of what, I mean, the Pope was alluding to yesterday in his Angelus message and his homily, because talking about the treasures and, you know, where do we place our treasures and how do we use them? People think of treasures, they think of material goods. Okay, they don't think of the treasures of the dignity of the human person and the different talents that God gives us, and we're supposed to use those treasures as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I love San Lorenzo. We'll get over to his site one of these days.
I'll have to get you a statue from Italy of him. He's very popular in Italy.
Oh, he's
huge. And you know, when you do come to Italy, and I say when, not if.
Say when.
The St. John, well, he's a saint in some ways, I think. Father John Ricardo from the Archdiocese of Detroit is the one who told me and Deacon Dom about St. Lawrence outside the walls, where St. Lawrence, whom we were just talking about, is buried. And he suggested that Deacon Dom and I go pray there. And that was during Dom's formation. And it was a really powerful experience. So that should be on people's bucket list to go visit the tomb of St. Lawrence in Rome. Okay, so, of course, I love the journey home, and so do so many other viewers and listeners. What's coming up on tonight's show?
We got a really neat one, and this is one that's a little off the beaten path in terms of the kind of stories that we often share, but it is one that I'm sure that some of your listeners have dealt with. Maybe even you have run across. So Dr. Matthew Wiseman is our guest this evening, and he wrote a book called The Two Jerusalems that came out from Ignatius Press, I want to say last year. But his background is in the Hebrew Roots movement. And I don't know if you've run across any people who are evangelicals who are into kind of messianic forms of Christianity.
Messianic Jews, yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. So
not probably a drop of Jewish blood in his body. But there are these evangelicals who want to try and, you know, look at the scriptures and say, how did Jesus live? You know, what was the world he was raised in? Did if he fulfilled the law rather than, you know, abolished it, then what does that look like for us as his followers today? And so in that world, there was everything from dietary stuff to dress to all kinds of things that really, you know, kind of were part of the Hebrew Roots movement, and sometimes arguments over, you know, how this should look in everyday life. But to fast forward, Teresa, if you want to know kind of the punchline of this, after a lot of study and prayer and research and discernment, he found out that the actual sort of full flowering of the Jewish faith and its fulfillment is in the Catholic Church.
Catholic Church, yeah.
So, and, you know, of course, going to Mass really revealed a lot of that, and you understand. I mean, if you've ever been to a synagogue or understood the way that Jewish worship takes place, and then you look at the Mass, I've talked to, I know you have as well, a number of people who come from Jewish formation who look at the Mass and say, this is clearly in continuity with what I grew up with.
Right. Well, look at the story of Rosalind Moss. She talks about
perfect
that a
example.
Lot, right?
Mm-hmm. And her brother David as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, it's pretty incredible. It's so interesting to me. These stories are so powerful because, as we always say, there's similarities, but people find their way eventually. What St. Edith Stein said, if you're searching for truth, you're searching for God, even if you don't know it. And so this search for truth, obviously those people believe in God, but it takes them down a path that they may not expect, and then they get there and they're like, wow, where have I been all these years? I could have had a V8, right?
Yeah. Now, are you invoking St. Edith Stein because her feast day was over the weekend, or because
she
also grew up Jewish, right?
Well, she fell away from her faith by the time she was 13 years old, right? And then she read the autobiography of St. Teresa of Avila, and she said, this is truth. And then she became a Carmelite. Yeah,
well, I love getting into these stories and getting into the connections with our Jewish patrimony, because sometimes Christians of all stripes, Catholics even, can feel like we were sort of dropped into the 21st century, and here's this faith that we have, and we go to Mass and we check the box, and it can be very easy to forget that there are not just the 20 centuries of Christianity that brought us to what we have today, but also the entire history, all of salvation history from Adam through Abraham and Noah and all the patriarchs and David that all brought this. It's all in continuity with what we mm-hmm. experience today.
Well, even pilgrimage, whether it's a pilgrimage here to, let's say, the shrine in Hanceville or to one of our basilicas in the United States, pilgrimage comes from the Old Testament. We go up to Jerusalem, right? Because they would pilgrim, and Jesus' family was on a pilgrimage to Jerusalem. And so I think we forget the roots and how, even though, as you said, we're Catholics, so we know the church has been around for more than 2,000 years, but sometimes it's hard to wrap your mind around that.
Yeah, you know, I love the first reading from Mass today, or yesterday rather, where it was talking a little bit about the traditions that were carried through mm-hmm. in the life of the people of God. It said the rite of the Passover was known to our fathers, but yep. in secret the holy children of the good were offering, sacrificing, putting into effect with one accord the divine institution. That sometimes it was this open thing that they practiced publicly, sometimes it was this little thing that they practiced secretly, and yet it was carried on, that tradition carried up to even Jesus at the Last Supper. And as we look around the world, the Mass is carried out in some places very publicly and openly mm-hmm. and sometimes in secret, but it's the same sacrifice being carried forth. And we learned to carry forth that sacrifice from generation mm-hmm. to generation from our Jewish forebears who did that with the Passover.
Do you find that with your guests that you have, and so many people who send in their stories to the Journey Home, the Coming Home Network, do you find that it is most of them come into the church? Is it a long period of time? Is it a year? I suppose everybody's different, but once they discover it, how quickly do they make that jump, do you think?
Well, that actually has less to do with the arguments and more to do with people's personal circumstances.
Okay, that's
more
a good,
often
that's
than
a good
anything
point.
Else. Because
yeah.
you can be convicted that the church is the one true church, but then you got to figure out, well, what do I do about my spouse?
who grew up
anti-Catholic,
education.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All this
mm-hmm.
stuff is usually what, you know, this is, as Marcus likes to joke, that we end up picking up the pieces after Catholic answers somebody's wacky questions. Mm-hmm. You know, because the apologetic side often deals with, you know, the arguments and the objections and the logic. And what we deal with at the Coming Home Network is much more the pastoral care side of things. Even Teresa, and you probably experienced this as well, even people who grew up in Catholic families and have walked away from the church, when they come back, sometimes they have siblings who walked away at the same time as they did.
Mm-hmm.
And these siblings now think, oh, what are you judging me now because you got religion?
Oh, yeah. That's what happened to me and Dom. Same
right.
thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So everybody has got all those sort of personal circumstantial things that often make what would easily be, I mean, if it was just a matter of just intellectual assent, then it'd be like taking a driver's test or something.
Right.
But it's
right.
always more than that.
Well, and it's a very complex situation. That's why your ministry is so important. The program is there for people to watch these great testimonies to be encouraged. And maybe if someone has fallen away from the faith and you're just, you know, hitting that remote and they find this, as Mother Angelica used to talk about. Or for those who really want the information on how do I make this leap because I know the church is the one true faith and I have to be in the Catholic Church. It's a process. And I think people need to be patient with themselves because, you know, right? Everybody is on a journey. Everybody's
Absolutely.
On a journey.
Absolutely. Yeah. And here we are, Teresa, in the middle of August, and I know for a fact, because you and I and Tom Price and everybody else, we get emails from them. We have non-Catholics who listen to Catholic
mm-hmm.
radio.
Yep.
And I just want to put it out there that if you're thinking about this and you're on that journey, OCIA starts up in all the parishes here in about a month.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe
mm-hmm.
this is your year. Who knows? And
you
if it is,
know.
We want to walk with you.
And we also want to encourage you to watch A Journey Home because it's such a helpful and a beautiful program. Thanks, my friend. Look forward to talking to you next week, both on Sunrise and right here on Catholic Connection. Matt Swaim from the Sunrise Morning Show, The Journey Home, and the Coming Home Network. And he fits it all on one business card. We'll be right back on a Monday morning. Michael New coming up. Stay tuned. Having a beautiful Monday morning, August 11th, 2025. You're listening to Catholic Connection. It's an EWTN production, EWTN.com. Always informative and helpful and enlightening to catch up with our friend Michael New. He is a professor. He's a researcher. He does a lot of great work in the pro-life area and has penned two recent pieces. And the theme this morning really is about activist judges. But Michael, let's start with the most recent story that is just horrific. You had pro-life counselors, sidewalk counselors, who were beaten very severely, and one man still has eye damage from that attack, and that was back in 2023. So a judge decides that, well, the guy said he was sorry, so therefore he's just literally getting a slap on the wrist. So let's start with that story, and thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me. The whole thing is tragic. You have two sidewalk counselors in Baltimore, two men named Richard Schaefer, Mark Crosby. They're both older than 70, senior citizens. In May 26, 2003, they're praying their sidewalk counseling, and this guy named Patrick Bryce comes along. They have an exchange. It gets violent, and Bryce assaults both of them, and the assault was vicious. I mean, one sidewalk counselor was knocked unconscious. The other suffered a concussion, broken fingers, and now has permanent damage to his right eye. So this was not just, a shoving match. This was a real assault, which, had serious negative consequences for both men's health. It was caught on video, so it's not like, he said, she said. The video is online. People can watch it. And their sentencing was this past week. And sadly, this assailant escaped jail time. His sentence was 1 year of home detention and 3 years probation. So you have a guy who just battered two elderly pro-life sidewalk counselors, and a judge just gave him a slap on the wrist. And that's just tragic.
And the prosecutor was hoping to get 10 years, right, for him at least?
Right, absolutely. The prosecutors wanted 10 years. They just said the viciousness and, of this attack and the fact it caused, permanent, damage to the eye of at least one of the sidewalk counselors justified a pretty substantial jail sentence. Sadly, tragically, you probably have a liberal activist judge who just didn't see it that way. And again, the guy just gets getting no jail time at all. Again, just 1 year of home detention, 3 years probation, also has to take some anger management classes and drug and alcohol testing. But all in all, it's a slap on the wrist. This guy really should be in jail.
Yeah, this is not justice, because if he is doing this to these people, what's to stop him from doing it again? And it's assault. It's assault and battery. Those are serious, serious crimes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and it's not like there's a real dispute about what happened. This is all on video. There are multiple witnesses. This should have been, a very easy. And the person, the assailant, the guy, his name is Patrick Bryce. I mean, he admits this happened. I mean, it's not like the facts are in any serious dispute here. He admits to just losing his temper. I mean, he apologized, which, is fine, but that doesn't, undo the damage he did. Again, this individual and any individual who assaults, elderly people like this needs to be put in jail.
Now, my understanding is that the sidewalk counselors, despite what they went through, they're back out there, right?
Right. These two men are very faithful, very holy. They sidewalk counsel in Baltimore. That's a tough place to sidewalk counsel. I mean, we're in a sidewalk counseling ministry in D.C., which probably, if anything, might be a little bit easier than in Baltimore. I'm sure this is a pretty low-income area. I'm sure they get a lot of pushback from people. The two men who do this, Richard Schaefer and Mark Crosby, very holy, very faithful. They have no regrets. And, in fact, they're encouraging others to join them. They said that, frankly, if there had been more people with them, especially more young people, more young men, this wouldn't have happened. And they are right that if there are a lot of people out there praying the sidewalk concert at the same time, that is a deterrent, that it's, easy to pick on two elderly folks. But if you have 10, 20, 30 younger people out there, a would-be assailant probably is not going to want to pick that fight. Right. So I'm glad they're still doing their sidewalk counseling. And I would encourage, if you have listeners in the Baltimore area, join them. Be a prayerful presence. Whatever time you can spend is a blessing.
Do you think this is going to have a chilling effect, though, in that area on getting more pro-life sidewalk counselors? Because it's tough everywhere.
It's tough, but sometimes things like this actually kind of draw attention to the sidewalk ministries in front of various abortion facilities. I know, here in Washington, D.C., people read my National Review Online article. We've had a couple altercations, and usually afterwards, turnout goes up. Usually people are interested in what we do. They want to support us. They're upset if one of our counselors is victimized or hurt in some way. So I think it may have the reverse effect. I think when these things get publicity, people learn about these pro-life sidewalk ministries. They sympathize, as they should, with the people who are victimized or assaulted. It may put more people on the sidewalk. So God can work in some very, very strange ways.
Yeah, so I'm looking at some quotes. Catholic News Agency had a big story about this, as you and I were emailing this morning. I use this story in my newscast, but we have the good folks at the Thomas More Society commenting on this, saying this was an act of cowardice and cruelty and sheer mayhem. The crime deserves far more serious consequences than a get-out-of-jail-free card, which is literally what it was, and a one-year home detention that amounts to nothing more, again, than a slap on the wrist. This is not justice. You know, John Paul II told us, forgiveness is not the opposite of justice. Obviously, we're required to forgive. But what about this? This guy thinks, well, then he can go out and do this again. I mean, if he'd get out of jail free card, just literally gets a slap on the wrist.
Yeah, right. I mean, this does not deter him. It does not deter others. I mean, very notably, Pope John Paul II did forgive the man that shot him. And that was
right,
very
but he stayed in jail. He didn't come out and walk arm in arm.
Right. Yeah, he said he didn't should be released from jail. I mean, the Pope did forgive him. That was very moving, very poignant. If you go to the John Paul II Shrine here in Washington, D.C., there's a picture of him talking with his assassin. Mm-hmm. But he never said this guy should be free of consequences. And this guy who assaulted these pro-lifers, he should not be free of consequences either.
Yeah, because it sends the wrong message in terms of whom you can go after. It's just really disturbing. We're talking with Michael New, Senior Associate Scholar from the Charlotte Lozier Institute and Assistant Professor of Practice at the Catholic University of America. He has two recent articles about activist judges. So we were just talking about the case regarding the pro-lifers who were attacked by this man who was just sentenced. The attack was back in 2023, barely a slap on the wrist, as a Thomas More Society represented the sidewalk counselor said. And these people are still struggling from their injuries. But you know what? They're dedicated pro-lifers. And as Michael has said, they have continued to sidewalk counsel outside the Baltimore Planned Parenthood despite what happened to them. What's been the reaction to the ruling, to the sentence, Michael? Have you heard anything before we take a quick break in the rest of the pro-life community? What are people saying?
I mean, everyone's just outraged. I mean, everyone just thinks this is just ridiculous. I mean, this has been picked up by a lot of Catholic and pro-life and Christian news outlets, and Fox News ran a story about it. The Washington Examiner ran a story about it. Everyone just thinks this is crazy. It's just a miscarriage of justice. This is a clear assault. There were serious injuries, video footage, no real dispute about what happened. Again, this individual should be in jail. He shouldn't just get away with home detention. So everyone's outraged, as we should be.
And we have 1 minute, but what about this judge in this case, in this particular case?
Well, the judge's name is Yvette Bryant. I don't honestly know that much about her. I don't know. She kind of vaguely said that, what happened before the assault could have been interpreted in different ways. I mean, the two apparently did exchange words, but that's just, I don't know what that's supposed to
mean. What does that got to do with the fact that the guy beat the living daylights out of them? It doesn't make any, exchange, that's got nothing to do with it. Assault is still illegal. You can't beat somebody up because you don't like what they said. I mean, that's so ridiculous.
Yeah, if someone assaults you, I mean, you have no right to beat them up, especially in such a vicious way.
Yeah.
So, again,
exactly.
This is a 28-year-old guy who beats up a pair of senior citizens who are kind of defenseless. I mean, he's making matters even worse. So, I don't know anything about this judge, really. But clearly,
all right, well, let's take a look at the next judge because I know this is another similar story. More with Michael New. We'll be right back on a Monday morning. Stay tuned. Elections matter, appointments matter. That's why it's very important to pay attention to whom you support at every level of government, even starting with the dog catcher, because that's where it begins. Learned that a long time ago in reporting. We are chatting with our friend Michael New, who is a wonderful writer and researcher and someone who keeps us up to date on what's happening in the pro-life community. And we were just talking about one case of an activist judge, and this was involving the case of two pro-lifers who were beaten very badly. And the man who was actually convicted on the crime, though, was just given a slap on the wrist. Now we move to another story. And Michael, this story is also very disturbing. It was a big story that made news, not only, again, very similarly in the Catholic and the conservative press, but also it was really big stories, I mean, on both sides, because, of course, the left loved it. But this activist judge came out in favor of supporting Planned Parenthood and makes this rule that, okay, well, even though the cutbacks to Planned Parenthood were part of the big, beautiful bill, now we're gonna continue to push for the funding. So tell us about that story.
Yeah, sure. That President Trump signed a budget that defunded Planned Parenthood. Because of the Hyde Amendment, mm-hmm. Planned Parenthood does not get Medicaid funding for elective abortions. Because of the bill that President Trump signed, they don't get Medicaid funding for anything. We realize as pro-lifers that whatever funding they get does indirectly subsidize abortions, even if it's not for abortion directly. So this is a very shrewd move by pro-lifers, and it was the first time we've succeeded in getting Planned Parenthood defunded. Well, Planned Parenthood does what they usually do. They litigate. They shop for a sympathetic judge. They filed a case in the First Circuit, which is the Northeast, pretty liberal. They drew Indira Talwani, who is a Obama appointee, and she ruled that the defunding of Planned Parenthood was unconstitutional. So she has actually issued a ruling that requires taxpayers to fund Planned Parenthood. Obviously, this is ridiculous. You know, Congress has the power of the purse. They can largely fund what they want. They can defund what they want. It's another activist decision. But, you know, I wouldn't despair. This will be appealed. You know, I'm pretty sure, pro-lifers will win in the end. It may cost us some money. It may buy Planned Parenthood some time. But your listeners can be pretty confident that I think we will win in the end.
So any idea how long this is going to take to adjudicate? Because where is it right now? So they just filed an appeal, right?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure how fast the process will go. I mean, the judicial system is not always known for its speed. But since it's dealing with a budget and a fiscal issue, I would imagine that it would probably get a prioritized spot on the docket. The one thing that I will say is the Supreme Court did rule earlier this summer that South Carolina could remove Planned Parenthood from its Medicaid program. So if the Supreme Court rules that South Carolina can remove Planned Parenthood from its Medicaid program, I'm pretty sure there'll be sympathetic arguments that the federal government can defund Planned Parenthood. So if and when this case gets to the Supreme Court, considering the composition of the court, considering the precedent, I think pro-lifers will prevail. But again, this ruling, you know, may cost us some time. It may buy Planned Parenthood some time. It may cost pro-life groups some money to litigate. But I think we can be confident that we will prevail.
So wasn't there support from taxpayers up to close to $1 billion before the big, beautiful bill removed some of that for a year? What was their number up to in terms of how much they received from us every year, Michael?
I mean, according to their most recent report, it was close to $800 million in taxpayer funds. And not all that was federal money. Some of that comes from state and local governments. I think as far as federal funds, it was about $500 million. That's about 25% of their budget. What a lot of people don't realize is that Planned Parenthood and a lot of other abortion facilities really are dependent on the government. I have a saying, big abortion needs big government. And typically in most years, Planned Parenthood gets close to 40% of the revenue from taxpayers. So if you defund them, you really set them back. I mean, you're really depriving them of a big source of their revenue. So again, if this all goes through, which it should, they're gonna lose about 25% of their funding. They're gonna have to close facilities, which they are. My most recent tally indicates that, you know, this calendar year, they've closed 40 facilities, including six in California, including their mega center in Houston, including places in Utah, Vermont, Michigan, Iowa, Minnesota. So, again, this is a good strategy for pro-lifers. It's been a long-term goal for us. Remember when Republicans took control of Congress in the 90s, nobody was talking about this. But now we've gotten pretty much every Republican elected official on board, and I think this will be upheld, and you're going to see a lot of Planned Parenthood's close.
So what happened to all of Planned Parenthood's support in terms of Hollywood and these huge money people like the Soroses of the world, who certainly have the pockets that could keep some of these facilities open? It's the same thing with the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. I find it fascinating that the approval for the defunding of the Corporation of Public Broadcasting and NPR, PBS, went through again, obviously a part of the big, beautiful bill. And all of a sudden they're saying we have to shut down. And there was an interesting story on newsbusters.org talking about, well, wait a minute, you've got all these gazillionaires that could easily throw a few hundred million their way without even, affecting their bottom line. And they don't do that or go out there and raise the money like pro-lifers do all the time. Right.
Right. I'm sure they're going to try to raise private donations to replace what they've lost in taxpayer funds. I can't speak for rich liberal people and how they spend their money or make donations. I'm sure that some well-off people with liberal views who support legal abortion will help out with donations. $500 million is a lot of money to make up in a short amount of time, though. So we'll see what happens down the road. But again, this defunding does set them back. And anytime a Planned Parenthood closes, it should be seen as a win for pro-lifers.
Amen.
When they close, that means there's fewer people working in the abortion industry. It means there's fewer abortions. It means they're not pushing these promiscuous sex education programs. It means they're not giving out these contraceptives. So it is a step forward, and it is a win for building a culture of life.
Talking with Michael J. New, assistant professor of practice at the Bush School of Business at the Catholic University of America and senior associate scholar at the Charlotte Lozier Institute, also does great work for National Review and other publications. It is, to me, just so important. These types of stories, Michael, are an opportunity for us to educate ourselves on what's going on with the abortion industry and remind us just what a giant, I always say it's like a giant octopus with tentacles everywhere that sucks the life out of it. But we have to put an end to the lies that they tell. Like, for example, this is a quote that was in an article in the Detroit Catholic about this story, this judge. And the head of Planned Parenthood says, "We will keep fighting this cruel law so that everyone can get birth control, STI testing and treatment, cancer screenings, and other critical health care." Well, they don't do cancer screenings. They do referrals. They put that out there, making it sound like they do all these wonderful things. The majority of their business is selling birth control. Now they're into puberty blockers and, of course, abortion. But they make it sound, you call a Planned Parenthood facility and say, "I want to make an appointment for a mammogram." They'll give you a referral, but they don't pay for the money to have the equipment and the people there on location.
Right. I mean, Planned Parenthood's main interest is abortion. They do over 400,000 abortions every year. I mean, last year, their annual report came out, I guess, in 2024. They said they did 400,000 abortions. That's a record. They buy larger in the, they do abortions. They also give up birth control, and they're also getting more to these transgender, quote-unquote, treatments. I think they're going to – that's a cash cow for them. People who are – I hate to call them treatments, but people who are, undergoing these, transgender treatments have to get these puberty blockers, and hormone treatments repeatedly. So every visit is more money in Planned Parenthood's coffers. They don't really advertise how many they do, but I think this can be a bigger and bigger part of what they do simply because they need money. I mean, they're interested in abortion, making money. They're not really interested in good public health. And people who need these things, there are fairly qualified health centers out there that accept Medicaid. They outnumber Planned Parenthood's like 6-1. And these federally qualified health centers are in much more diverse areas. I mean, Planned Parenthood's are on near college campuses and in big cities. You don't see a lot of Planned Parenthood out in like rural parts of the country. So, funding these qualified health centers, defunding Planned Parenthood, that's a gain for public health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you find a large college campus, even a small college campus, for example, a large college campus in my area, southeastern Michigan, would be either Wayne State University in Detroit or the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. And you can find pretty big abortion facilities there as well. I mean, they strategically plant themselves there, or they plant themselves in areas that are heavily, residential with minorities, African-American, Hispanic-American, because those are the two highest groups that they target, right? They go after them. And, for example, in the city of Detroit, 8 Mile, right? It has so many different abortion facilities. And this is what people need to know. These are opportunities, I think, to educate people, because even people who are pro-life may not realize the extent of the damage that Planned Parenthood does.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if you read Margaret Sanger, she believed in eugenics. She was a racist. I don't think it's a coincidence that Planned Parenthood shows up in these minority neighborhoods in great numbers. And again, they are not a healthcare provider. They sell abortions, over 400,000 a year. That's where they make their money. Whatever other healthcare they do is just peripheral. They are an abortion business.
But think about that number that you just said. I went back to that when I saw that statistic, 400,000 plus abortions. Try to wrap your head around that, right?
Right.
I mean, the fallout from that, the babies that were killed, obviously. But we know the impact abortion has on every single one of us, but especially the mother, and the long-term impact psychologically, emotionally, spiritually, physically, all the issues that come. I mean, and think about all the societal ills. You think about all the abortions every year. I remember talking to, I think it was Vicki Thorne, the late Vicki Thorne, who did all these different connections to abortion and the fallout. And she even did a whole series of articles, and she did all these talks about men in prison and how many men who did not have a say in the life of their child because their girlfriend or wife went ahead and had an abortion, or if they helped procure an abortion, what that did to them and how they ended up in prison. There's a big connection between that as well.
Right. Even some of the pro-life rescuers who spent time in jail for pro-life civil disobedience, they met a lot of post-abortive people during their time in jail. And you just see it as a sidewalk concert, the people who get very upset with us, and lash out at us. You know, these are people who almost certainly have abortions in their past, either had an abortion or were involved with the decision to have an abortion. So there's a lot of hurting people out there. You know, I do want to let listeners know that, you know, Project Rachel and other groups do offer free counseling for anybody who's post-abortive. If somebody out there needs help, I mean, there's absolutely no shame in picking up the phone, getting some free help, going on a retreat. It could literally change your life. Catholic Church and others are willing to reach out to post-abortive women and do what we can to be of service to them. But there's a lot of hurting people out there. You know, we've had tens of millions of abortions since Roe v. Wade, and there's just, quite a lot of collateral damage.
Yeah, absolutely. Project Rachel, Rachel's Vineyard, both are excellent. Check with the diocese because they usually have a chapter of one or both. And also, don't feel that you need to stay away from the church if you're connected to an abortion somehow, because God forgives as long as we have a contrite heart. He loves you. He wants you back in his arms and in the graces and the sacraments of the church. Michael, great discussion. Thank you so much. What are you working on next? What can we look forward to?
Oh, we've got all kinds of stuff coming up. The Hyde Amendment anniversary is coming up next month, and I'll have some new calculations about how many lives it saved. So I'm looking forward to that, and I'm going to keep working with my pro-life sidewalk counseling ministry. Also, 40 Days for Life, the fall campaign starts September, so we're going to be doing a campaign in D.C., a kickoff rally. I will let you and your listeners know about that.
Great. Thank you so much for your great work. We've been chatting with, of course, a regular guest on Catholic Connection here on EWTN, Michael New, Senior Associate Scholar, the Charlotte Lozier Institute, and Assistant Professor of Practice at the Catholic University of America. Michael, thank you for all your great pro-life work and your articles. Really appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Much appreciated.
All right. Have a great week, of course, checking in with Michael New. It is a Monday morning. We appreciate your listenership here on EWTN's Catholic Connection. When we come back, we will let you know what's coming up in the second hour on this, the Feast of St. Clair of Assisi. Pray for us. It might be kind of fun if you're not too busy, or even if you are busy, to take some time, take a breath, and maybe just do some research on St. Clair. Now, I would love for you to check out my series on the saints, which is free, and you can go to EWTN.com, as I mentioned earlier, /Saints in Italy. It's connected to my book, Italy Shrines and Wonders, but I actually did a whole segment on St. Clair in Assisi in front of her church. So beautiful. And I also tied it in with you-know-who, our very own Mother Angelica. We'll be right back. Hope your Monday is going well. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, and you know what? This is a day the Lord has made, so let us rejoice and be glad in it every single day. And these stories that we share with you, great stories that Michael shares with us, for example, on National Review and coming to us as a researcher with the Charlotte Lozier Institute, it's really important to take a look at what's happening, because we can educate ourselves. We need, who was it that Father Hardin, who was a great catechist, who a Jesuit priest who spent his last years in the Archdiocese of Detroit, would say, educate, educate, educate. The education never stops. Never stops. Because you know what? The Catholic Church is inexhaustible in terms of her wisdom. And so we need to make sure that we understand what the Church expects of us. And like the gospel yesterday, to whom much is given, much more is expected. So keep that in mind as we move through the week and every day here with you on EWTN. Coming up in the second hour of the program, very excited, we are going to be talking about St. Clair of Assisi. I will take you to Assisi and describe the town for you, describe the church, describe a little bit about her life. As much as I can cram into about 8 minutes, I could talk forever about Italy, especially the beautiful town of Assisi, and so many interesting stories about St. Clair and how her family, as was with St. Francis, thought that they were, well, not all there psychologically, and tried to prevent them very strongly from doing what God wanted them to do. But we know the results. God won. We'll be right back. And then we'll also take a look, speaking of saints, at a wonderful, wonderful story about relics and EWTN. You have to tune in to find out, coming up on EWTN's Radio Extra, hour number two of Catholic Connection, coming your way.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
Happy Monday. Happy Feast of St. Clare of Assisi, whom we'll be talking about in just a little bit after our news and our short break and the weather and all that good stuff. It is her feast day today, of course, directly tied to the founding of EWTN, the Poor Clares, and our own Mother Angelica. And again, as I mentioned in the first hour of the program, I did want to remind you that we have a beautiful series that's free, and it's based on my book, Italy, Shrines and Wonders, which was published earlier this year by EWTN. And it is a perfect companion for those of you wishing to, even if you don't have it in the near future, plans to go to Italy, or if you just want an armchair pilgrimage, you want to learn more about the saints and the beauty of the faith in Italy. It's a great book, and it's beautifully done by EWTN in terms of the actual production value of the book. It could even make a great coffee table book. It's not hardback, but the paperback has a really deep quality to it. Anyway, I digress. So the book is there for you, as well as a free series based on the book. It's called Saints in Italy, and it was done by EWTN's wonderful Mission Advancement team, where they do these online series that are free, and they're related to EWTN books. And for example, at the end of each segment of the series, including one on St. Clare, we have reflection questions. What can we learn from the saint? What can we learn from the location, the city? So check it out. You can go to EWTN.com/Saints in Italy and even watch today the segment on St. Clare, which is, I think, about almost 6 minutes long. Not too long, but you'll see the church, you'll see the area in Assisi where she lived and where she is buried, where you can visit her relics. So it is very, very interesting and beautiful. Speaking of relics, after our 2 cents segment, we're going to be diving a little bit more detail into her life on this feast day. We are going to be talking with, in studio, Father John Paul, and then he's going to be joined by two men who are working on a very special project related to the saints and relics and EWTN. And we will fill you in, but you have to wait till the bottom of the hour. So you have to tune in for the whole hour. Just saying. And why wouldn't you want to? Because it's EWTN Radio Extra. All right, let's take a look at the weather because it is going to be hot out there and we are going to get some rain around the country. The National Weather Service this morning is saying there is going to be heavy rainfall in the southern plains, the Carolinas and Florida. And then there will be a lot of heat in the west and also in the northeast as well. So here's some more details. Heavy to excessive rainfall, again, according to the National Weather Service, over parts of the southern plains, the Florida Panhandle, and the coastal Carolinas. And they're saying that this rain could bring areas of flooding, and that could happen today. And then we have hot to extremely hot temps that are in place through early this week across much of the western part of the country and northern New England. So it's happening on both sides from coast to coast. We're getting a lot of heat and even some rain. Right now, it's almost 4 minutes past the hour. We appreciate you here, and we hope that you stay tuned for both hours of Catholic Connection every day, both, of course, on EWTN Radio's main website and our 600-plus affiliates, and also right here in the second hour on EWTN's Radio Extra. Right now, again, almost 4 minutes past the hour, and you are listening to EWTN's Radio Extra channel. Here we go with the news. While addressing the faithful gathering in St. Peter's Square for his Sunday Angelus, the Holy Father reflecting on the gospel passage from Luke, inviting the faithful to ask themselves how they are investing the treasure of their lives. Quoting the Lord's words, he said, "Sell what you own and give alms." And he says, "Christians need not cling to the gifts they have received from God, but should use them generously for the good of others, especially those most in need." He added, "It's not only about sharing material possessions, but about putting into play our abilities, our time, our affection, our presence, our empathy. Each person," he said, "is a unique, priceless good in God's plan, a living, beating capital that must be cultivated and invested. Otherwise, it dries up and loses its value." The Holy Father then warning the faithful that this treasure can be squandered or even taken by those who, like a thief, turn it into an object of consumption. The gift of God that we are, he stressed, needs space, freedom, and relationship to flourish. And above all, it needs love, which transforms and ennobles every aspect of our existence, making us ever more like God. The Holy Father's remarks yesterday, echoing the teachings of St. Augustine, who Leo quoted, "What you will give certainly will be transformed. It is in gold, It isn't silver, but eternal life that will come your way. And you heard us discussing this story in the first hour of Catholic Connection today. Catholic news agency reporting a 28-year-old man found guilty of assaulting two elderly pro-life activists in front of the Planned Parenthood facility in Baltimore, but was sentenced to only 1 year of home detention and also avoided any jail time. Judge Yvette M. Bryant handed down Patrick Bryce's sentence after he was found guilty of assaulting then 84-year-old Richard Schaefer and 73-year-old Mark Crosby on May 26, 2 years ago. At the time, the two were providing sidewalk counseling in which they encouraged potential Planned Parenthood clients to choose life instead of getting an abortion. Prosecutors had hoped to put Bryce behind bars for 10 years, and the Thomas More Society condemned the sentence as disgraceful. They said one of the victims was knocked unconscious. The other suffered broken facial bones and lifelong eye impairment. In other news this morning, Mark Mayfield tells us the office of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says a call was held with President Trump yesterday.
According to the Prime Minister's office, the two discussed Israel's plan to take over the remaining Hamas strongholds in Gaza. Netanyahu also thanked Trump for his support of Israel since the start of the war. It comes as many of Israel's allies have been calling for a negotiated ceasefire in Gaza to secure the release of the hostages and to help resolve the humanitarian crisis in the Palestinian territory. I'm Mark Mayfield.
Five journalists working for Al Jazeera are dead, killed on Sunday by an Israeli airstrike. Jody Ginsburg with the Committee to Protect Journalists says these types of incidents must be addressed.
Journalists are civilians and should never be targeted in war, and they must cease and desist. We also need to see far greater action from the international community.
Israeli claims one of those killed was actually working with the Palestinian terrorist group Hamas, while Al Jazeera says the strike was a targeted attack on the media in Gaza. NATO Secretary Mark Rutte said Friday's meeting between President Trump and Russian leader Vladimir Putin could be an important step to ending the war in Ukraine. He spoke about the implications in an interview with ABC's This Week.
Next Friday will be important because it will be about testing Putin, how serious he is on bringing this terrible war to an end.
Trump did not say where in the state the meeting will take place, but said further details will be following. He also has not said if the Ukrainian President Zelensky will be involved. President Trump, meanwhile, holding a news conference today on crime and beautification in Washington, D.C. In a Truth Social post yesterday, the president said the news conference will not only involve ending the crime, murder, and death in our nation's capital, but will also be about cleanliness and the general physical renovation and condition of our once beautiful and well-maintained capital. Well, Texas Governor Greg Abbott ramping up pressure on Democrats who have fled his state. In an interview with Fox News Sunday, he said the threat of arrest for those lawmakers remains as long as necessary.
If they show back up in the state of Texas, they will be arrested and taken to the Capitol. If they want to evade that arrest, they're going to have to stay outside of the state of Texas for literally years.
The governor also saying it's within his authority to keep the Texas legislature in a special session and to do that indefinitely. The Democratic lawmakers say they have left the Lone Star State to keep state Republicans from having the quorum needed to redraw the state's congressional maps in their favor. At least 100 members of the 150-member Texas House must be present to conduct business, and approximately 50 of the Democrats have left. Abbott says their commitment to voting as elected state officials is a duty and not optional. Alongside Abbott's extended threat of arrest, the Republican governor has also threatened to increase the redistricting margin for his party if lawmakers don't return. Meanwhile, Vice President J.D. Vance is explaining and defending the GOP-led redistricting efforts in Texas, saying they are necessary to ensure fair representation. In an interview with Fox Sunday Morning Futures, Vance claiming Democrats have tried to, what he's called, rig the game in their favor for years, and that Republican efforts to redraw congressional maps is essential to restore the balance.
We're just trying to rebalance the scales and, frankly, push back against a very unfair system created by the Democrats.
His comments after, again, the Texas House Democrats fled the Lone Star State to keep the state house from having the minimum numbers of members needed to proceed. And religious leaders continue to call for the end of Florida's controversial alligator Alcatraz. A prayer vigil held outside the immigrant detention facility in the Everglades yesterday. It came as construction, but not operations at the site, has been temporarily halted while environmental laws are being considered. Michael Kastner tells us the owner of a Trump Burger restaurant in Houston is out on bond following his arrest by Immigration and Customs Enforcement.
Roland Biani came from Lebanon to the U.S. in 2019 on a visa that required him to leave the country by February 2024. ICE arrested Biani in May for overstaying his welcome, and an immigration judge granted him bond as he waits for an immigration hearing. ICE says the case proves the law applies regardless of what restaurant you own or political beliefs you might have. I'm Michael Kastner.
An 11-year-old girl in California recovering after being bitten by a mountain lion outside of her home in Malibu. It happened late Sunday afternoon while the girl was feeding chicken. She was rushed to a local hospital after being bitten on the arm, but is expected to be okay. The mountain lion was tracked down, shot, and killed by California Department of Fish and Wildlife officers. Last year, a 5-year-old boy was attacked by a mountain lion at Malibu Creek State Park. And Natalie Rodriguez tells us she has a reminder for parents with children going back to school to think before you post.
Your social media feed is about to flood with pics and videos of kids heading back to school, but be careful with what information you put out there. Officer Kira Delva with Miami Police warns.
Avoid putting your child's full name. Avoid putting the name of the school or the grade. Keep the information very vague because strangers could use this information to gain trust with your child, and we don't know what their motives are.
Also, a good reminder to drive with caution. Lots of kids are walking or riding their bikes to school. Remember to watch out for them and the school zone speed limits. Natalie Rodriguez, Miami.
AOL is shutting down its dial-up. Remember that? Dial-up internet service after more than 40 years. Once a staple of the early internet era, the service, which connected modems through phone lines at one time, boasted millions of customers. And even as late as 2015, AOL says it had more than 2 million dial-up customers. That number has since dropped to the low thousands. The service will be discontinued this fall on September 30th. And finally, in our news segment on a Monday morning, on this, the Feast of St. Clair of Assisi, pray for us. Rob Martier reports that the FDA has now approved a new device for rheumatoid arthritis.
The device is a neck implant called the set point system, which gives a small zap of electricity to the vagus nerve once a day to lessen inflammation. The company behind the set point system says the device will be available in some U.S. cities later this year and nationally in early 2026. The company said a late stage clinical trial of the set point system found that after a year with the implant, 75% of patients no longer needed medication for rheumatoid arthritis. I'm Rob Martier.
It is a Monday morning. We appreciate you here at EWTN. Don't forget, tonight on the network, we have the wonderful Journey Home program, and Matt Swain described that in the first hour. Of course, there's also the Coming Home Network, if you know someone who's interested in exploring the one holy Catholic and apostolic faith. Well, speaking of which, coming up in studio, we are going to have a real treat. We have three very special guests to talk about, speaking of the saints, relics. There's actually a relics project underway for our studios at EWTN. We will tell you all about it, so hang on. Some great news coming up, and we'll also talk about, first up, the beautiful St. Clair of Assisi and our very own Mother Angelica and the Poor Clares. You need to go to the shrine in Hansville. It's a mini Assisi. It's amazing. We'll be right back. We're having a beautiful Monday morning, this August 11th, 2025, the Feast of St. Clair of Assisi. We'll talk more specifically about her relics in Assisi and this segment and also our next segments, because there's all kinds of cool stuff coming up with relics and the rest of the hour, so you don't want to miss it. And it's so beautiful because I know that some people, especially if they're converts or maybe even reverts, don't understand relics. And it can be seem very strange. We get a lot of questions when we do pilgrimage about relics, but we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the program. First, though, I do want to encourage you to do a little bit of research. If you just plug in, if you just Google St. Clair of Assisi or about St. Clair of Assisi, there's a ton of really great resources. Of course, we have a lot on our website at EWTN.com. But let me give you a little background. I do have a whole section on Assisi in my book, Italy's Shrines and Wonders, and we have some beautiful pictures. beautiful pictures of the basilica, beautiful pictures of her basilica, of St. Francis of Assisi and his basilica. There's so much to see related to both of their lives in Umbria, and more specifically, of course, in Assisi. So you can get the book through our EWTN religious catalog, and the name of the book is Italy's Shrines and Wonders. But St. Clair was born in 1194, and she's a patron of eye disease, goldsmiths, laundry, but probably most known for being the patron of television, which, of course, is a connection between Mother Angelica the Poor Clares and St. Clair of Assisi. But what I loved about St. Clair, and what I love about her so much, was her determination to be a part of this movement of Francis of Assisi. So let me give you a little background. I got this from Catholic Online. St. Clair of Assisi was born in Assisi in 1194 as Chiara Offreduccio. What a beautiful name, Offreduccio. The beautiful oldest daughter of Favorino Schifi, Count of Sasso Rosso, and his wife Ortolano. Tradition says her father was a wealthy representative of an ancient Roman family, and her mother was a very devout woman belonging to the noble family of Fiume. As a young girl, Claire dedicated herself to prayer at age 18, and she heard St. Francis preach during a Lenten service in the Church of San Giorgio and asked him to help her live according to the gospel. On Palm Sunday, and Annie Mitchell and I were talking about this morning, in 1212, she left her father's home and went to the chapel of the Porticula, or Little Portion Church, to meet with Francis. And while there, her hair was cut off, and she was given a plain robe and veil in exchange for her rich clothes, her rich gown. Now, she joined the convent of the Benedictine nuns near Bastia, which is actually very close. See, I know this because I live in that area part-time. Bastia is a city very, very close to Assisi. As a matter of fact, you go through Bastia before you get to Assisi. To live under the Francis orders, when her father found her and attempted to force her back into his home, she refused and professed that she would have no other husband than Jesus. In order to give her greater solitude, Francis sent Claire to Sant'Angelo in Ponzo under another Benedictine monastery. Her sister, Caterina, also joined and took the name Agnes and joined at the monastery. The two remained there until a separate dwelling was built for them next to the church of San Damiano. Now, San Damiano, and you may know that name because it's associated with the San Damiano cross, a famous cross that spoke to St. Francis. That's where the cross originally was located, in the convent of San Damiano, which is also in Assisi, down the street a little bit from St. Clair. And now the cross, the San Damiano cross or crucifix, the famous crucifix, is in St. Clair's Church in Assisi. So the minute you walk in, you go up the stairs, there's this beautiful piazza with a fountain, and then to the right, there is a small wall that overlooks the Umbrian Valley. You can see St. Mary of the Angels below, which is where the Porticula Church is now, Little Portion Church. And you walk in, the first thing they do is they direct you to the right. And what's so interesting, and we took friends there last year, and this wonderful guide who lives there, her name is Daniela, she's great. She said, you know, so many people fly through this chapel. They think they're just walking to go around to get down to the tomb of St. Clair. And they're missing the San Damiano cross, the cross that spoke to St. Francis that is now kept in the Church of St. Clair. Anyhow, over time, other women joined them, waiting to also be brides of Jesus and live with no money. They became known as the Poor Ladies of San Damiano. They all lived a simple life of austerity, seclusion from the world, and poverty, according to a rule which Francis gave them as a second order. Now, the other cool thing about this church, in addition to the San Damiano cross, once you see that, they bring you out and you go downstairs. And you go and you walk this beautiful path underneath the church to see the tomb, to venerate the relics. We're going to talk about relics next, in the next two segments. But you go down and you can venerate the tomb of St. Clair of Assisi. And as you're getting to the tomb, there's all these beautiful quotes from her about Jesus. And then you come back out. And then you are in front of this massive area with relics. You have vestments from Francis. You have habits from Claire. You have her hair. You even have the grate, right, from which she spoke to people because she was cloistered. And then you even have, speaking of the order, You have the order for the Poor Clares. So there's so much to see. And many people, again, go through way too quickly. So something to keep in mind when you get to Assisi. So San Damiano became the center of her new order. And then it was then known, as I said, as the Order of Poor Ladies of San Damiano. For a brief period of time, it was directed by St. Francis himself. And by 1216, Clare became the abbess of San Damiano. 10 years after Clare's death, the order became known as the Order of St. Clare. Now, what's interesting is that she fought off invasion with the Eucharist. There's a beautiful statue of her, and I have one in my office, both here and in Italy, of her holding a monstrance with her hand held out. And she fought back with the love of Jesus. And so she's known for that, but she's also known as a patron of TV, which is where this connection comes in with Mother Angelica. And we'll talk a little bit more about this in our next two segments. But it's amazing because think about it. This was in the 13th century, right? So why would she be associated with TV? Well, there's a story for that, a true story. One time when she was very, very, very sick and she was in her cell or her room, she was very frustrated because she couldn't get to Mass. And she was praying and wishing that she were in church so she could receive Jesus in the Eucharist. And all of a sudden, on the wall of her cell, it was like the first live shot, right? There's a scene. She's watching the Mass in her cell. God gave her that gift of a live shot from the church where Mass was being held. So that's why she is considered the patron of TV. That is a very, very strong story connected to St. Clare of Assisi. So the construction of the Basilica of St. Clare was finished fairly quickly in 1260. And on October 3rd of that same year, her remains were transferred there and buried beneath the high altar. Now, nearly 600 years later, her remains were transferred once again to a newly constructed shrine in the crypt of the Basilica of St. Clare. And her body is no longer claimed to be incorrupt, but you can venerate her relics. And the Order of Poor Ladies was officially changed to the Order of St. Clare in 1263 by Pope Urban. And as I mentioned, here's a little bit about her being the patron of television. She was designated as a patron of television in 1958 by Pope Pius XII because when St. Clare was very ill, she could not attend Mass and reportedly was able to see it and hear it on the wall of her room. And she's also the patroness of eye disease, goldsmiths, and laundry. And her feast day is today, August 11th. Such a beautiful way to learn more about St. Clare is to go to, of course, and St. Francis, the shrine in Hanceville, and to learn more about the ministry of our very own foundress, Mother Angelica, Rita Rizzo from Canton, Ohio. And you really get the feeling, and I try to describe this, and I think you will find it interesting, in the series that I did, Saints in Italy, about the life of St. Clare and her determination, very similar to the feistiness and determination of our very own Mother Angelica. But imagine, I wonder what St. Clare would think, and I wonder the conversations that Mother and St. Clare are having in heaven about EWTN, which is now the largest religious broadcasting operation, not just in the United States, but in the world. St. Clare of Assisi, pray for us. We'll be right back. Such a treat this morning. Hope you're enjoying the entire program, but I really enjoy catching up with an amazing priest, Father John Paul Mary. And Father, this is something that's near and dear to both of our hearts because we both spend a lot of time in Italy and with relics. I just love the saints. I know we have special guests in the studio with us this morning back in Iredale, so I'm going to let you introduce our special guests and let our listeners know why they're here because it's a very special project you're working on together with our other guests regarding the relics of saints. So tell us about it. Good morning. Thanks for joining us, Father.
Yeah, good morning. It's good to be here with you today.
So your guests are, we have Ryan. Is Ryan in studio with
us? Yes, Ryan, yes. Ryan Penny is just arriving here in studio, and also Daniel Godinez, too. They are working with this project with me as part of EWTN Studios, kind of a new initiative called Got Relics. And Yeah, we have a lot to talk about. It's just in the beginning stages now, but it's really exciting. Yeah, because we have a lot of relics here at EWTN on our grounds, and also at the Friary too, that have been donated to us throughout the years. So like, a lot of people say, first off, how did you get so many relics?
Mm-hmm.
You
mm-hmm.
know, because it's really because of the generosity of our viewers. A lot of viewers, years ago, Mother Angelica would say to people on her live shows, if you're worried about your family, your children, giving away your, you know, your religious relics that you have of the saints, send them to me. I'll take care of them.
Mm.
So the sisters have actually more than we do. So through the decades, people have sent them to me. Actually, last week I just received two from an EWTN viewer.
Of whom? Which relics?
St. Anthony of Padua.
Wow.
And St. Pius the X.
Wow.
And they don't have papers. So usually we want papers with them.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes because of them being passed down through the generations, through family, people lose things when they move. And mm-hmm. paperwork is not included when people send them sometimes. So... Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit, Father, yeah. before we bring your other guests with whom we were chatting during the break on, because I want to talk about relics, because many people, I know you lead pilgrimages too, and oftentimes people have questions.
Yeah.
And it's not always every person that comes on a pilgrimage, as you well know, is necessarily at a strong place in their faith. They may be coming just because they want to see, let's say, Italy or Ireland or another place mm-hmm. that has many saints, mm-hmm. and they're coming with a friend, or they want to see the beauty of the art, and they have a lot of questions and maybe even very negative about relics, thinking it's very bizarre, very barbaric. Let's talk about the importance of relics in our faith and why this is not only okay, but that we're blessed to be able to venerate relics of great saints, for example, like the saint today, Saint Clare of Assisi.
Well, I think I'm just going to be very simple about it. God created a family.
Mm.
We are a family. And let's just say if somebody dies from your family, your grandparents, somebody that you love, your parents, you want something of theirs. And sometimes even their house, their clothing, their articles, it almost exudes a fragrance of them, a remembrance of them. And in a very real sense, God created a family, the family of God. And you know, just because of our baptism in Christ, because we've been baptized and configured into Christ, the eternal high priest, we are made sons and daughters of God. Literally part of, you might say, the bloodline of Jesus Christ. I mean, we are saved by him. We're saved by his precious blood. We're configured to him. We're imbued with the power of the Holy Spirit. So when we come into the presence of these men and women who have loved God the most, these mm-hmm. are the friends of God. They loved God the most. We're coming to into contact with people and their remains, and we are paying homage to the way they lived their life in Christ. Does that make sense?
Makes perfect sense. And I think it's really beautiful because it when you, for example, what's so interesting, and this week we have the Assumption coming up later in the week, right? Our Blessed Mother was assumed and was given that gift from God. So we do not have relics of the Blessed Mother. We don't have relics of Jesus because, of course, Jesus ascended into heaven. We do have relics of the cross. We have relics of the crown of thorns. We have the shroud, which is not, you know, considered an official relic, but is encouraged to venerate the shroud, which is pretty phenomenal. But the relics, I think, are very important, even for our Protestant brothers and sisters, because in the early days of the church, they must realize that we had these bodies from the saints, St. Paul, right? St. Peter. We know where St. Peter is buried. We know where St. Paul is buried. We know where all the saints are buried. So it's important for us to go back and look back. And then we can also ask the question, well, why aren't there relics, for
yes.
example, of the Blessed Mother? So it's a very important part of our faith.
Yeah, early Christians would have taken very seriously even the places involved in the mm-hmm. martyrdom of these saints, when saints were killed for the practice of their faith, for belief in Jesus, for belief in the resurrection, for belief in the real presence, for belief in the creed in general. these Christians would have erected churches around their remains. Mm-hmm. So from the early church until this present day, that's kind of been the practice in venerating the saints and paying homage to these friends of God, the family of God.
Before we take a break, I have about 2.5 minutes, and then we'll bring our other guests on to talk about the Relics Project, Got Relics. What's the difference between a first, second, and third degree relic, Father?
Sure. So a first-class relic is part of the body of the saint. So a piece of perhaps a piece of bone, a piece of hair, a piece of flesh even. A second-class relic would be something that the saint owned. So maybe a book. Maybe a piece of their clothing. A third-class relic would be an object that is touched to a first-class relic or a second-class relic. So if somebody venerates the body of the saint or the clothing of a saint, if they touch a holy card or a medal up against a first-class relic or a second-class relic, it's made into a third-class relic.
You know what I'm looking at in my home studio here?
No.
A first-class relic of Teresa of Avila.
I love that.
That was given to me by a priest friend of mine who was given. Mm. It was given to him when he was in Rome, and he said the Lord told him to give it to me because of my work in Catholic media and because she was such a great communicator with her writings. And I'm looking at it right now, and there she is, St. Teresa of Avila.
Pray
my
for
gal.
Us.
I was named after her. Amen. So when we come back, I want to really get into this project. This is so exciting and so important. Is there going to be, I know there's an online effort, but is there going to be a physical place on the grounds, either at the shrine in Hansville or in Iodoro, where people can actually go and venerate the relics that have been collected?
Well, right now, they're in my office, so our tour at EWTN doesn't really include back there in that hallway because we really can't accommodate so many visitors back there.
Mm-hmm.
So, at least right now at this point, no.
So you can't make your office part of the tour?
Well, you talk to Michael Warsaw about that. I can't really say that.
Right. No, but it's just so wonderful. But I think it's great that we'll have access to this in another way. All right. When we come back, we'll get more details on this beautiful Got Relics project at EWTN. We have three guests in studio with us this morning, including, of course, Father and then Daniel Godinez, all working on this amazing project. And they're going to be putting some information out about it today, I believe. And we'll tell you more when we come back on a Monday morning. You're listening to EWTN. Got Relics, EWTN does, and they're putting together a beautiful online presentation to help you learn about the beauty and the importance of relics. We have Father John Paul Mary, who talked with us in the first segment just a few minutes ago about kind of the overall idea and how the relics came to EWTN. Also joining us, Ryan Penny and Daniel Godinez. All right, so Ryan, tell us your involvement in the project and what we can expect to see. Thanks for joining us.
Well, Teresa, thank you so much for having us on this morning. To be honest, I'm in a state of like not feeling that we're quite worthy to even talk about this project yet. I didn't realize until about an hour ago that I was going to be on the radio this morning.
Surprise!
Surprise!
Welcome to our life.
So hot off the press. I know.
Yeah, welcome to live radio.
This morning. But no, it makes it great. It makes it fresh. And this is a part of a new initiative under the newly dubbed EWTN Studios, under the new presidential leadership of my boss, Peter Gagnon.
Peter Gagnon.
And
he's amazing.
Yes, he is. And all of the content production under the name EWTN is under this new flag of EWTN Studios. And it's basically, you know, what I say to people is it's the same old mission of Mother Angelica, which is to advance the truth with a greater emphasis on storytelling.
Wow. So and what will we see online with this Got Relics project?
The reason why the Got Relics project is important is because, so we look at every story, every conversion story, every path of faith that a saint follows, that we attempt to follow. Every story is a thread in the canvas of salvation history that God is writing. And displaying relics is one important way to point people to that truth, that their life is meant to be more than just trying to get ahead, that we have an eternal purpose. And I've heard it said, if you want to bear witness to the faith, then you should live your life in such a way that it doesn't make any sense apart from the gospel.
Wow.
And certainly carrying around threads of hair from people who lived 500 years ago and displaying it in a gold monstrance makes no sense apart from the truth of the resurrection.
Wow.
And that's why I'm looking at a
hair.
A piece of hair. Actually, that is right in front of us. We have a relic that I'm touching right now.
St. Clair, her hair.
Is it St. Clair?
A thread of hair from St. Clair, whose feast day is today.
I have it
praise
with
be to God.
Yeah.
So, yes, and that's what we're inviting people into, is that our faith, the Catholic faith, is so rich, it's tangible. You can touch it. The incarnation has so many implications beyond what we typically think about. And of course, like we know about the Eucharist, confession, all the sacraments, but the relics are also an extension of the incarnation, that our divinized brothers and sisters who have gone before us, we have hope in the resurrection. We are all going to rise with our bodies at the end of time. Their bodies will be glorified and perfected. And that's what we're called to be, too. If we persevere to the end, that is the eternal glory that awaits us as well. So there's a great hope in all of that. And they all have, these saints lived amazing heroic lives here on earth with amazing stories. And with this new relics project, what we're trying to do is not just show people the relics, but invite people into the stories of the saints. It's just one little episode in their life where they lived heroically. And then Father John Paul makes the connection to how it's relevant to our life today.
And so, Daniel, let me go to you. And Ryan, thank you so much. And please feel free, gentlemen, to jump in. But, Daniel, what's the goal in terms of a deadline for the Got Relics project? When can people expect to see something? What do you think?
That's such a great question. I think everything that Ryan was saying is just beautifully said. Maybe you should just go back to Ryan. It's such a beautiful project because of every single factor that Ryan just mentioned. As far as the timeline, I believe that we're playing it by ear at this point. We're going by the liturgical calendar and all the feast days of all the saints, especially the ones that we do have relics of.
Yes.
That are sitting right there at Father John Paul's office. And he continues to get relics. For example, last Friday we shot a few more of these videos that are generally going up on our social media platforms and are absolutely crushing it. Praise God. And it's because I think that it goes hand in hand with the new initiative of EWTN Studios and EWTN Next, which is to continue to serve our global audiences that we have been serving for the past 45 years, but also a new transformational vision of seeking out the new generation and the platforms that they're using on a daily basis, which is, the social media platforms,
podcasting,
TikTok,
podcasting,
and all that stuff. So this Got Relics project is part of that initiative, and it's something very Catholic. We're getting very Catholic with this because there's a lot of youngsters that don't know what relics are. And the goal of each and every single one of us is to eventually have our own relics. We want to shoot for holiness. We want to be saints eventually. And that's, glory to God and his grace. But eventually we're all going to have relics, if we're doing our homework the right way.
Yeah, St. Padre Pio actually said to a woman who was trying to snip away some part of his cord, he actually said to her, go make your own relics. go make your own relics.
Amen.
I love that.
And Daniel said it great, perfectly, actually. I think our hope is to have these peppered all throughout the liturgical year. Mm-hmm. So right now, I think the three of us feel like we're on, like, just getting on the on-ramp.
Amen.
Right. So we're just starting. We really don't have anything past August right now.
Yeah. And a couple have already dropped, Teresa, just so you know.
Here's the reporter in me. I want to get the who, when, where, when, why, and how. Okay, give me the background. I understand what's going on. But in terms of what listeners, viewers, people who follow us online, which is millions, as you yeah. well know, around the world, where do they find these videos? Yeah. Where do they find information on Got Relics?
Well, right now, they're on all of our major social media platforms. Okay. So if they're on Instagram, they can follow us on @EWTNmedia. They're on YouTube. You can find us on the EWTN YouTube channel.
But is it under that title, Got Relics?
Yeah. Okay. So if you if you're on YouTube and you type in EWTN Shorts, Got Relics, then you should find a couple of them. We've dropped three so far. We've dropped St. John Vianney was the first one.
Today we dropped another one, which was St. Philomena, which is now four of them up there.
Wow. Okay,
and later on today, we're going to drop St. Clair.
So we've dropped St. John Vianney, St. Dominic.
Yes.
And St. Clair.
St. Teresa.
Benedict of the Cross.
Benedict of the Cross.
Oh, and she's amazing.
St. Philomena.
Love her.
Yeah. So several great ones out there in social media land for people to enjoy. There's going to be many more coming.
Well, I'd love for you guys, I'm just going to throw this out there, but no pressure, as we say in live radio, but I'd love to have you join us, one or all of you, when you are going to drop these so we can let people know. I mean, so they can go to the link and watch them, because the more we want to get pick up steam on this, because this is such a crucial part of our faith. And my husband and I live in Italy part-time, and we live just southwest of Assisi. And so we have in Umbria, it's like the land of the saints. It's crazy. We could go see St. Angelino of Foligno or, you know, oh my goodness. Blessed Jacopani and Todi, or go to Assisi for St. Clair and St. Francis and others. And we love the saints. And to me, understanding this more deeply, what the relics mean, this is huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we want to also encourage people that we all have a story, right?
Right.
So
right.
The saints have a story. Their story, like Ryan said, they're part of the fabric of salvation, the part of the tapestry of salvation. But we're part of that tapestry of salvation. Mm-hmm. So we want to encourage people that, like, you have a story, too, in your life that is valuable. This saint that we're doing, this particular day that we're getting across, we're highlighting their life, but also we want people to be reflective about their own life, to look at their own story, and how does my life need to change?
Right.
You know, we started out the reel with St. Philomena. Are you desperate? So we want to have a hook line, right, that kind of draws people in, you know, and everybody, think about that. Are you desperate? We've all felt desperate at one time or another in our life. Are you desperate? So, like, what are you desperate about? What is it in your life that, you know, is a like kind of like a hunger pain, you know? Sin really is a result of, you know, kind of a turning our hunger, something in our life, away from God. Mm-hmm. But we want to turn people back to God. And I think the saints, by connecting us with their story, helps us to reorient our way back to God.
I'm looking at some quotes from St. Clair of Assisi. I love getting quotes from the saints on their feast days. She says, "We become what we love, and who we love shapes what we become." Mm-hmm. And you stop and think about that.
Yes.
She says, "Do not be disturbed by the clamor of the world, which passes like a shadow." Mm-hmm. And also says we are to become vessels of God's compassionate love for others. You know, I think of the relics in the Basilica of St. Clair, which are incredible. I know, Father, you've been there many times, but you go down to see her tomb, you have to venerate her relics there, and then you come back around, and there's this whole area of nothing but relics. It's phenomenal, all of that gathered in one place. And to be able to do this online for people is wonderful. What about people who can't get to Italy or Poland or wherever? This is so crucial.
Yeah, and also, you know, Teresa, there was a point in the early church where all Christians knew the importance of relics. It was it was normative for the faith back then, and it's more essential than most devout Catholics think of today, because it's in, or at least it's supposed to be, in all of our altars and all of our churches. Mm-hmm. Do we even know about what saints are buried within the altars? So a part of this whole relics project is to, I guess you could say, make relics normal again.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm.
That's a great tagline.
Hashtag. Make relics normal again. Because, you know, even the most, you know, devout Catholics, they'll, you know, have, you know, artwork of, as we should, the Sacred Heart of Jesus, the Immaculate Heart of Mary, maybe even the Chaste Heart of St. Joseph, have holy water, different holy reminders around the home. But do we have any relics? Mm-hmm. Do we even think that we could or should? They're essential, you know, meant to be integral to our incarnate faith.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, I think I love what you said about everyone has a story. And sometimes we look at saints and we keep them, as especially as cradle Catholics, maybe up on the shelf in that statuesque or the iconography, which is great to have holy reminders, as Mother Angelica always told us. But do we know about their lives and the struggles that they had? And to me, that's very comforting when you see that these people had struggles. You look at St. Francis and look at his family, and his family was very upset about what he did and the fact that he, you know, walked away from his life. And also, if you look at St. Clair, right, the fights that she had with her family, they dragged her back, I think, twice, and then she says, no, I'm going back to, you know, to follow Francis and to be with Jesus. So these are real life stories, even though these people may have lived, for example, like Carlo Acutis or, you know, Pier Giorgio Frassati, who will be canonized on September 7th in the last 100 years, or you go all the way back to the, you know, the 11th, 12th, 13th century, these other great saints, right?
Right. It's like, if they can do it, then we can do it too.
Yeah. Something in the history of the church that kind of is another thread that goes throughout, you know, the life of the church, is that there are miracles associated with the relics of the saints. So just even look in the Acts of the Apostles, there are miracles associated with even fabric or cloths that were touched to the apostles, St. Peter and St. Paul. People were, the woman reaching out to touch Jesus,
the
tassel.
Cloak of Jesus to be healed.
So there are miracles associated with the relics of the saints all throughout 2,000 years of lived Christian experience. People can look even those up online. Beautiful stories of relics and miracles.
All right, one more time before we go, because I always want to give people the information, the details. Ryan, where do they go to find these beautiful videos, these shorts about the saints and the relics and got relics at EWTN?
On all of EWTN's major social media platforms, so Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok in particular, and even Facebook. Wherever, all the major social media, you'll find us there.
Gentlemen, thank you. Great work, Father John Paul, Ryan Penny, and Daniel Godinez, talking about got relics. We have them, and we're showing you them online, so you can learn more about the saints and be more like them, which is our goal. We'll be right back. Speaking of powerhouses in the church and saints and all the good that they do, tomorrow, on this very hour of Catholic Connection, the EWTN Radio Extra Hour, we're going to be doing, of course, our Newman News with Kelly Solomon from the Cardinal Newman Society. It was announced just recently that he's being named a Doctor of the Church. So what we'll look at tomorrow, and maybe I'll talk about this in two cents. There's so much to say about the saints. What does it mean to be a Doctor of the Church? There are actually four female doctors of the church, and now we have this great, wonderful person who was dedicated to so much of his life to education in the faith and making sure people understood the faith. But the Cardinal Newman Society is all about, obviously, education, and Kelly Solomon joining us on Tuesdays. But this is a big deal that he is being named a Doctor of the Church. So what are they doing? What's been the reaction in the circles of the Cardinal Newman Society? Well, we'll find out tomorrow with Kelly Solomon. Of course, we'll have the latest news for you, and it's going to be a great show. You don't want to miss it. So again, a suggestion for today, a little homework assignment, is to look up about St. Clair of Assisi, and also look up about the life of Mother Angelica and the connection between the two. And put on your bucket list to not only come to EWTN for a tour of the studios, but to go to Hanceville and the Shrine. It is breathtakingly gorgeous, peaceful. Retreats are offered there. There's a beautiful bookstore. Of course, Mother Angelica's tomb. So much to see, and especially the Eucharist, a special Eucharistic chapel. Have a great Monday. St. Clair of Assisi, pray for us. Talk to you tomorrow. Ciao, ciao.